Good morning. As has already been stated so well by Noah, we welcome you here to Northeast this morning, whether you are present in person and taking the time to be with us this morning or whether you're joining us online. Thank you for taking the time for doing that. This season, for a couple of weeks, we're looking at the theme of God with us, and we're looking at three different angles on this idea of not only waiting for God, but also how we progress forward in that attitude about God being with us. So you think immediately of the passage from the book of Isaiah that says, "This shall be a sign unto you, a virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and you will call his name Emmanuel." And that is quoted once again in the context of the birth of Jesus that we read about in the book of Matthew and the book of Luke. And Matthew and Mark and Luke all have that comment about the name of Jesus and Jesus being born. And that was in the context not only of longing, as Noah talked about last week, asking the question, what are you longing for? What do you desire? And we know that in a lot of ways the world was longing for, and especially the Jewish people were longing for, the coming of the Messiah. And Noah asked us the question last week, what is it that we long for? There's a difference in desiring something just to have it and desiring really what we need. And you remember the illustration last week. You know, it's funny, sometimes somebody will do an illustration and you'll remember the illustration and remember what he did, but maybe you don't necessarily understand the point of the illustration, you know. In a few years, y'all may look back and say, "Yeah, y'all remember when Noah got up there with that Coca-Cola and popped the top and we heard it?" And so, but what was that sermon about? I don't know, but I just remember that Noah got up there with a can of Coke and I remember that. But listen, there was a point to that. And the point is, those things that we want aren't always necessarily what we need or the best thing that we need. And the point that Noah made last week with that is we have a longing, a yearning within us as human beings. God created us that way. And so are we filling that God-sized hole in our hearts with the wrong things or things that might not necessarily even be bad, but they don't ultimately satisfy? And so we're called to be like that deer that pants for the living water. As the deer pants for the living water, so my soul longs, yearns for you. And only God can satisfy, through Jesus Christ, that God-sized hole in your heart. So we are longing. That's what we talked about last week. What are you longing for? What are you looking for? Are you longing for the right things? But this week, we're going to talk about this. How do you wait? If we're desiring something or longing for something, seeking something, what are we going to do in the meantime? And the reading just a minute ago by Chad from Psalm 37 is a great passage in the Old Testament that addresses this idea of waiting. All of us, every single one of us in here this morning, we're waiting for something. We're longing for something. We're expecting something. And along those lines, this is the reality, let's face it, our lives are lived by the clock. The clock, the calendar, it just dominates our lives. How many of you this morning have arrived at this place or point in time and did not look at a clock at all, or a watch, or see the time anywhere? Is there anyone in here who arrived this morning that did not look at a timepiece? I'm looking really hard. If there's some, and that's my point. We live by the clock. We live by our calendars. We live by our planners. And I believe in a lot of ways God created us that way. When he created the world, the universe, there's an order to the universe. There are 24 hours in a day. There is day and night. And even from the beginning, mankind, even if they were just observing the sun or eventually created sundials and later on created clocks, providing these things in our lives creates a certain amount of order out of chaos. And I believe that's part of the reason God created time and created things the way he did. We live by the clock. We are dominated in everything that we do by the clock. I look up here. It says 24:32. For those of you who don't realize that, we have a screen up here that gives you the current screen, the next screen, and then there's a timer up there. And it used to be 28 minutes, but I found out this week that Noah wanted to extend it to 30 minutes. When is the last time? Yeah. Which reminds me of this fact. I don't know if these teenagers are still doing this. Are y'all still timing us every time we get up to preach? You are. You got the timers up here. You see what I mean? I'm making my point. And the fault of Nick, by the way. I'll just tell you that right off. Nick, where are you? Is he in here this morning? I saw him this morning. Pardon? He's in the coffee area. Okay. He knew I was going to be talking about him, so he decided not to come in this morning. So we live by the clock. We're dominated by the clock. We have our calendars. Every week we have a staff meeting here at church, and one of the items in our staff meeting is the calendar, and we're planning. And so it just dominates our lives. And another thing to note as well, you think about how much this subject of time just rolls off our lips. Think of all the terms, and these are just a few of them, the terms and expressions that we use to refer to time. Time flies. Time marches on. I don't have the time. I wish I had more time. Where did the time go? What time is it? Time's up, time out. And I came up with about 20 of these, but I wasn't going to go through all of them because we use terms that refer to time so often. How many of you have used the term time flies or something like it? Like, how many of you over the last, maybe the past couple of weeks, you've been struck by the fact that time's gone by so quickly? How many of you have said something like, oh man, where's the time go? We all do that. How many times when I'm having a conversation with Jeannie, I say something like, yeah, so-and-so happened like 3 or 4 years ago, and then she'll say something like, no, that was 8 years ago. And I'll think, what? That was 8 years ago? We all talk about how fast time flies. What about this idea of not having enough time? When is the last time you had the feeling or said something to the effect, I wish I had more time? Or I don't have enough time? We all think and speak in those terms. So here's an observation right off the bat about this idea of waiting in reference to time. Let's face it, waiting can be hard. It's difficult. Because by nature, most of us are not good at waiting. And I think it just goes back to just kind of how we were created and how we're wired. When a little bitty baby is hungry, when a baby is wet and uncomfortable, what does a baby do? A baby wants it right now. A baby cries. They want to be fed. They want to be diapered. They want something right now. And see, the struggle comes when we get a little bit older, and we maintain that mindset that says, hey, listen, I want it right now. I want it in an instant. I have a hard time waiting. Noah last week talked about how hard it is and how hard it was when he was a child to wait for Christmas. The time between November and December 25th seemed so long. Most of us have a hard time with waiting. And I could illustrate that in all kinds of ways, with all kinds of illustrations, even a simple one like many of us, when we go to a grocery store or a department store or something like that, we don't like waiting in line. And if we're in line, if you do like me, and you're at the grocery store, it's one of the places where we wait the most, what do? You look at the other lines, right? And that one's moving a little faster. And you think, man, I'll just look funny moving. But I think I will. I'll move over here. And they think, ah, winner. I'm getting out faster. And then the line slows down, and you see the other line going fast. And then you get all frustrated. Waiting can be hard. In all kinds of circumstances. It includes waiting in times and circumstances and situations that are very difficult. We're waiting for the test results. We're waiting for the job. We're waiting at the end of life for somebody that we love dearly, and it's a waiting game until that happens. Waiting's not easy. But this is also true. Moving too fast can get us into trouble. And I don't know what it is about our human nature. You may not be this way, but you feel better. You feel more at ease if you're moving faster and things are getting done quicker. It's kind of like when Jeannie and I were doing some traveling during my sabbatical a couple of months ago. We took about 10 days and just drove out west. And we had a couple of stops. We went to Mount Rushmore. Eventually, we went to Yellowstone. That was on my bucket list. Very grateful we were able to do that. But one thing I loved traveling out west is that right there, the 80-mile-per-hour speed limit. You know, stretches in Montana and Wyoming and South Dakota. It's like, oh! I've just felt guilty. You know, it's like 80 miles an hour. Is this the law? And it felt wonderful to go that fast. And I just got used to traveling that speed on the interstates. And then I've already told some of you the story, but when we were coming back, we were driving through Nebraska, and they had the nerve to post the speed limit at 65. And I had gotten so used to driving 80 that felt so slow, especially in a desolate stretch of highway. So I did what I shouldn't do. Kids, I don't recommend this to you. But on a 65 highway, I set my cruise to 75. Once again, Romans 13, I understand, obey the laws of the land. I get it. So I set it to 75. No one's there. Flat stretch, straight road. And I'm just cruising along. And it still felt kind of slow, if you ask me. And I'm driving along, and a truck passes by on this side. And I don't think anything about it until that truck starts slowing down. And then I see the blue light. And you know how you feel if that's happened to you. It's like, ugh. Turned around, came up. First thing he asked me, he said, did you know you were going 75 miles an hour? And I couldn't lie to him. I said, yes, sir, that's what I had my cruise set on, 75. And I said to him, and I know it's no excuse. It is no excuse. And once again, I don't recommend speeding. I said, officer, we've been driving around. I just got so used to driving 80 in other places. It just seemed so slow. Nobody's on the highway. And thankfully, he let me off with a warning. All right? Yeah. He was a really nice guy. But the point is, listen, it's just this idea that's how we can be sometimes with our lives. Why is it that we want to move so fast and we're unwilling to slow down? You go to the Bible and you look at the Sabbath law and you look at that principle, and even though we're not under the old covenant Sabbath law, the principle is still real. And that is the importance of rest and slowing down. That is a lot of the point of Sabbath, the idea of rest, because if we don't, we wear ourselves out. We miss things. I can't tell you how many things I have missed because I wasn't paying attention. I was just wanting to get from here to there. My dad, when I was growing up, a lot of times he would say to me, and it really bugged me. He would say, Grady, calm down. Because, believe it or not, I was wound a little tight, all right, when I was a kid. Now, I'm not that way anymore. But when I was a kid, I was really wound tight. And I resented my dad saying that to me. Grady, calm down. But it's true. It is so true. We can be like Vin Diesel and just go through life fast and furious. Which brings me to this point, and it is really an important point about this whole idea of waiting. Isn't it nice to know that there is someone who is not limited by time, is not bound by time, is never in a hurry, sees the big picture, keeps his own schedule? God, who is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, the first and the last, doesn't work on my time schedule or my time desires. And he certainly doesn't have a problem with waiting or resting. He created the principle of Sabbath. He rested from his labors. And because of that, God has perfect timing, and which leads us to really, to me, a key scripture in all of this discussion about waiting and learning to wait and the importance of waiting. It says in Galatians 4:4, when the right time came, at just the right time, when the fullness of time came, God sent forth his son, born of the woman, born under the law, who sent him to buy freedom for us who were slaves to the law. And I don't have time this morning to get into the context of Galatians 4, but Paul is making the point that the old law, the old system, or any law system, whatever it might be, cannot save us, cannot make us right with God, because whatever the law or the law system might be, we all stand guilty and condemned before the law. And so if we're trying to be justified or right with God based on our performance in relation to law, then we're missing the boat. It comes through our reliance and dependence upon Jesus Christ. We were set free from that. But I want you to notice the point that it was at the right time that Jesus came. And it was in the context of waiting that Jesus came. At just the right time, history changed. Jesus was and is the point of history. Jesus was and is the turning point of history. Everything that we do related to time, anytime we write a date or write the year, it's a testimony to Jesus. Time is measured by when he arrived, before Christ, and then after Christ, Anno Domini, the year of the Lord. But that was in the context of a lot of waiting, wasn't it? A lot of waiting going on for that. You think of the promise to Abraham? 1,000 years before Jesus came, by you or through you, all nations of the earth will be blessed. All nations, all people are going to be blessed through you and your descendants. Here's a man 75 years old. His wife, Sarai at the time, 65 years old. They're beyond childbearing years. And yet God says to him, it is through a child that's going to come through her and you that all nations are going to be blessed. 1,000 years. And he had to wait 25 years, a quarter of a century, for that promise to come about. But it wasn't just Abraham and Sarah. It was the history after that. It was the years in Egyptian bondage, in slavery. It was being under the rule, the dominion of foreign powers like Assyria and the Babylonians and the Persians and the Greeks and the Romans. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And then you have this period between the prophets and the coming of Christ. 400 years of prophetic silence. And then he comes at just the right time. And people will speculate as to what makes it the right time or what made it the right time. We don't have all of those answers, but we do know at the time when Jesus came, there was a common language throughout the known world of that day. It was Greek. There was a system of travel and roads that was unprecedented up to that time. Easy routes of travel, relatively, not compared to our day, but back then it was very easy to move around in their context, to get the message out, to share the word. And certainly the people were waiting for the Messiah. They were looking for the Messiah. They were looking for their freedom. And my friends, this is the main point of all of this discussion. So if you're looking for a big idea today related to the idea of waiting, it is this. It's not if you'll wait, but how you wait. Because you're going to wait. You know, there's that song by the Gaithers, "Lord, teach me to wait." And in a sense, that song is nonsensical. From one angle, I understand the point that's being made. Teach me to wait. But the fact is, from one angle, I don't have to be taught how to wait. I'm going to wait. The question is not if I'm going to wait, but what am I going to do while I wait? And a lot of that is the point of Psalm 37 that was read just a minute ago. David is struggling, dealing with, lamenting the reality of enemies against him, enemies against righteousness, injustice that occurred in the lives of people back in that day, that occur in the lives of people today, of all time. There's this struggle with evil and wrong. And David is contemplating on this reality. And you read the entire psalm, Psalm 37, the message is clear. God will bring things about. God is a just God. God will right all wrongs. There will be justice. There will be judgment. And it will be based on his justice and perfect mercy. And you look at all the different expressions in this, and I'm impressed with the different ways waiting is described just in these first few verses of Psalm 37. Be still. Wait patiently. It's going to be a little while. And then this statement, do not fret. The word literally here, and I'm no Hebrew expert, but the word here literally means getting hot and burned up. It relates to our word, maybe, or our expression when we might say something like, don't get hot and bothered. Commit your way to the Lord. Don't be envious. Refrain from anger. And then this one, enjoy safe pasture. In the midst of waiting, and I believe here he's talking about having this relationship with God. The same thing that you see in Psalm 23, another psalm of David. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Listen, if we have a relationship with God, and it's a secure relationship, and it's a real relationship, even while we're waiting in difficult circumstances or waiting for the right thing to happen, we can still enjoy that relationship, safe pasture, being in the Lord, Him providing. trust in the Lord and do good. And here's my point, and this is kind of a revelation to me as I was preparing these thoughts. A lot of times we think of waiting as being passive, right? Don't we? And so I was going to put something on my screen like, you know, waiting is often passive. Or it's sometimes passive, you know. But it's not true. It's never passive. Waiting is never passive. Because while we're waiting, we're always doing something or thinking something, right? It's never just waiting and not having anything going on in our minds or our hearts. When we wait, we're doing something or we're not doing something. The issue is, and the question is, what am I thinking? What am I doing? What is my attitude as I wait? It's never passive. But sometimes we think it is, but it's not. Airport in Houston several years ago, I was reading an article that gave reference to a book that talked about this. And the officials at that airport in Houston were struggling with complaints about the amount of time that people were having to wait for their luggage at the airport. And they did everything they could to improve. Have you ever been there? You ever been waiting at the carousel for your luggage and you think, okay. So what they did, they hired more staff, they had more people handling the baggage, and then they became the leader in the industry, this is several years ago, in the time between getting off the plane and getting your luggage, 8 minutes. But they found out even when they did that people were still complaining about their wait. But this is how it was happening. They were getting off of the plane, and the distance between getting off of the plane and getting to the luggage carousel was about 1 minute. And so they were still walking to the carousel, and they were still having to wait 7 minutes. And they didn't like that. So they said, what are we going to do? We can't do it any faster than this. So their answer was to devise a plan where you get off the plane, and they increase the distance from when you got off the plane till you got to the luggage carrier. That's what they did. And the complaints ended. Same amount of time. You see the point I'm trying to make. As long as when you're waiting, you feel like you're doing something, it's occupied time or productive time, then you can handle it okay. A lot of it is in our perception. And so this would apply to this whole concept. When we're waiting for the next day, it would apply to this concept of worry. Jesus says, don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. We've heard this for years, right? We know this passage. Matthew 6:34, don't borrow trouble. As you're waiting for tomorrow, don't borrow trouble from tomorrow. Don't worry about it. And I know sometimes this is very difficult for us. But it's true. We all understand, and we all intellectually and factually can say, most of the things, and statistics bear this out, most of the things that we worry about happening don't happen. I read somewhere one time about 70% of the things that we worry about happening don't happen. And then there's another percentage that's added to that are things that we worry about that we don't have any control over. How many things are we caught up in anxiety about that we have absolutely no control over? But if we get stuck in that mindset, And we're living in constant fear of what tomorrow holds, then it causes us to be less productive in the small amount of things we actually do have some control over. And so, it's not just about not worrying about tomorrow, it's what we're doing with today as we wait. Because the verse that immediately precedes about don't worry about tomorrow is this statement: seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. We're waiting. But we're not waiting passively. We are trusting. We are seeking. We are developing that relationship with God in green pasture that sustains us through all of those difficult things. Knowing that we can wait with peace of mind. I just hit the 30-minute mark. Ah, the clock, time, right? We know how it plays out. We know the end game. Many of you would be very proud of me when I watched the Alabama-Auburn game a couple of weeks ago. That's a picture from that game. And if you're an Auburn fan, I'm sorry. But you would be proud of me because as I watched that game, I was totally calm from beginning to end. Did not worry. Did not get my britches in a bunch. I was so at peace, it is absolutely, you should have been there. Fourth down, 31 yards, fourth and goal to go at the 31-yard line after messing up a snap and a penalty. Listen, I was totally calm. Now, here's a little detail I left out. I'm talking about when I watched the replay of the game. I recorded it, and it is amazing how calm I was as I watched it the second time, because I already knew the outcome. But the point's the same when we're talking about this idea of waiting for God. In the book of Revelation, one of the themes that comes through in Revelation as those people suffered is, how long, O God? How long, God, will you wait as we suffer and are persecuted, are dealing with this difficult situation? God, when are you going to act? And God did. Domitian's, the Roman emperor, his rule ended. The empire was judged ultimately. But there's this reference in Revelation to the final, ultimate outcome. And however you interpret the book of Revelation, and I know there's difficult things there related to the interpretation of that eschatology in Revelation. But once again, here's the main point in Revelation. Jesus rules, Jesus reigns, Jesus wins. He's already won. We know how the game ends. And in that, we can wait. His timing is always right. And he makes this offer to you. He says, trust me, grow into me, learn of me. And you'll discover, as you see how I work in your life, that my timing will always be right in your life. Now, it may not seem it at the time. When the fullness of time came, God sent his Son at just the right time. God sent his Son. So the question, once again, is not, will you wait? It's how will you wait? That makes all the difference. What have you been waiting for? Are you waiting and longing for the right things? Are you truly seeking God's plan and will in your life and seeing that timing in your life? And for you, it may be, you know, I believe in Jesus. I believe he's the Son of God. I believe he's raised from the dead. But you haven't taken that step. You haven't committed your life to him. If you believe he is who he claimed to be and believe he is alive and reigns, the question for you is the same question that was posed to Saul of Tarsus by a man named Ananias. What are you waiting for? Arise and be baptized and wash your sins away, calling on the Lord's name. But that may not be where you are. That may not be your need this morning, but you're waiting on something. Remember this. God says to you, this too shall pass. Wait on me. And so if you want to let us know while we sing the song, whatever that need is, whatever step you need to take, as you're waiting, in some areas you don't need to wait passively. You need to take some action. You need to take some next steps. If you want to pray with one of our shepherds in our prayer room back here, they'll pray with you. We'll encourage you. We want to be your partner in your journey in Jesus. And so keep that in mind and respond however you need to as we stand and sing this song.